Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's Monday, May 2nd, live, to be rebroadcast Wednesday, May 4th, 2022 on 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You may email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FransDorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So if you're listening on Monday on Facebook Live, Wednesday, May 4th is Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. What's your memory of Star Wars?
You didn't.
Yeah.
You did.
I remember when I first went to see Star Wars in 1977. It was the summer of 1977. And my boyfriend then was Greg Sarafin. That was a really long time ago. Mm. I mean, I was with him when I was 14 for a few months. And
way
that's
before
it.
Me.
Oh, yes. And over the years, he eventually, he and Swati Lele got together, and they actually wound up finding each other off and on until college, and then they finally got together, and they got married, and they've been married a very long time and have grown children, and it's great.
May the 4th be with you.
Yeah, may the 4th be with
you.
Yeah,
it's very cool.
Yeah, so, and then I'm not real great with all the liturgy of Star Wars, and I mean, I know some things, and I feel like at some point I should watch the movies one by one, but watching movies is hard for us because when we finally sit down at the end of the day, we often fall asleep in front of things.
Well, I was going to say, we have to stay awake if we're going to watch movies.
I know, right. And if it's now, it's this time of year when it's nice out, I'd rather be outside than inside watching stuff. So,
right.
So we don't watch a lot of movies. I mean, we'll watch shorter shows. I watched the final episode of season 2 of Bridgerton last night, and that was nice.
Lovely.
Spoiler alert, Kate and Anthony do get together. And spoiler alert, you find out who Lady Whistledown is. But I won't tell you any more about that. But if
should
that's something you're interested in.
Should you want to know?
It's a cultural thing. It's kind of cool.
Okay.
So when did you first see Star Wars?
Oh, Jeez, had to be the first one that came out. I saw it right away. Mm-hmm. I saw it at the movie theater. It was incredible. It was like, it was such a cutting edge movie at the time.
Do you remember where you saw it?
I don't.
Right. Well, you had your bike shop already, right?
What year did it come out?
77.
Yeah, no, I did not.
Oh, you had your bike shop in 78.
78 is when I opened.
So you almost had your bike shop.
Almost had the bike shop.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Neat. Yeah, it was such a big deal. And, you know, it set the stage for so many more space-related action movies. And, you know, now we have the Star Wars, and we have every kind of Star Trek starting from the original series all the way up to Discovery and all kinds of other stuff. And we have so many other Star Wars things like The Mandalorian. And anyway.
Good stuff.
But it's a big part of our culture. So I thought I'd mention that if you're listening on May 4th, may the 4th be with you.
Mm.
All right. So there's something very important I want to talk about. And that's that my colleague, Mariah Hinchy at Tau Vitality, there's going to be a conference about Lyme disease and tick-borne illnesses, which is a great thing to be presenting if you live in New England, because ticks, right? Ticks are just everywhere. So here's the information I got from Mariah Hinchy and Tau Vitality, her naturopathic practice in Hebron, Connecticut, who are sponsoring the conference. So the first Lyme Bite Symposium is happening May 21st and 22nd at Mohegan Sun Casino in Uncasville, Connecticut. Lectures will be given by 16 live experts in various fields. There will be 15 industry experts in testing and treatment. There will be two healthy gluten and dairy-free lunches served at the event, and there will be nonprofit treatment grants available. This event is hosted by the Dow Center Vitality and Lyme Warrior, a patient-focused nonprofit. Lyme Bites 2022 will offer attendees a deep dive and the skills necessary to support families affected by Lyme disease. There will be a panel of renowned physicians and researchers in order to bring a comprehensive experience to all healthcare providers. The presenters will be Dr. Joseph Burriscano, a pioneer in proper Lyme diagnosis, Dr. Alexis Chesney, naturopathic committee chair for ILADS, which ILADS is the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Symposium. And Dr. Nancy O'Hara, who I've seen speak before at other conferences, she's the Physician Advisory Board member of the Autism Community in Action, and she's the weekend's keynote speaker. Attendees will be offered a great deal of information, including how Lyme disease and other infections play a role in a growing number of neurological and autoimmune diseases. Speakers will discuss the connection between Lyme disease and depression, anxiety, Parkinson's disease, dementia, autism, PANS, and PANDAS. You can learn vital information about Lyme disease as needed to survive and thrive, about prevention, reliable testing for diagnosis, proven effective natural and integrative treatment strategies. There will be discussion on how mycotoxin illness, such as mold, can complicate matters and how to diagnose and treat it. You can visit LymeDiseaseConference.com to register and to find out about a discounted student rate. Dr. Hinchy and Dow Vitality look forward to connecting with you. Once again, you can visit LymeDiseaseConference.com to register and to find out about a discounted student rate. All right, so that's, I thought I'd tell you about that. So while we're talking about it, let's do a short piece on Lyme disease. I'm not going to get too much into it because I will probably attend at least part of the conference. And as we said, that conference is May 21st and 22nd. And so I'll get some good information then, and I might be able to give some insight about that. But in the meantime, here's some things to think about. One of them is that Ron Aretti got diagnosed. We're not sure if he had Lyme disease, but he had ehrlichiosis. He got a blood test for, wasn't feeling well. He got on his bike and his legs were really heavy and he couldn't get up the hills, and it wasn't his chest. It wasn't his breathing. It was his legs, and he had bad joint pain and stuff. And it was a couple of Saturdays ago, and I said to him, this isn't right. We should go to the walk-in. He's like, oh, I don't know if we should, I don't know if we should go. You know, what if my insurance doesn't,
I don't go to the doctor.
What if my insurance doesn't cover it? And so myself and our friend Randy, because it was Passover that day, we were going to go to a Seder. Our friend Randy, we told Randy we're not going to come to the Seder because Ron's not feeling well and we have to go to the doctor, or we should go to the doctor. And Randy said, definitely go to the doctor because of your history. And then then our friend Corey, who was on the bike ride when you discovered your bump on the road last year, she said, go to the doctor. So he had three women barking at him to go to the doctor that day and not waiting until Monday. So I took him, and fortunately we went up to the urgent care at UConn, and they said, you probably have a tick-borne illness, and we're going to draw blood for you, and then we're going to give you doxycycline right now, just in case. And if it comes out it's negative, stop taking the doxycycline. Well, the labs came back, and he had antibodies to ehrlichiosis. So there's all kinds of tick-borne illnesses out there. I also was looking at Facebook. If you find a tick on you, you can take that tick and save it. And you have to go on to the website to look to tickreport.com and look there and see what their requirements for how to package the tick is. I didn't check on that. I have been told in the past that if you want to save a tick to have it tested, that you put it in a glass vial with a little bit of alcohol. But I'm not sure what they're looking for. So if you're interested in, if you find a tick on you and you want to send the tick out to be tested, you can go to tickreport.com and they'll tell you exactly what to do, how to preserve the tick and how to send it out. And then they'll send you back a report. And I was watching one of my Facebook friends, got a tick report, and she posted it, and the tick had Lyme disease and Babesia in the tick. And her doctor had told her that she was fine, but she was concerned because the tick tested positive. Now, I've heard doctors say in the past, well, if you have a tick that tests positive, that doesn't necessarily mean that you caught it from them. And that may or may not be true. Some people might choose to do prophylactic antibiotics, and some docs might give them out. So you could get a prophylactic dose of doxycycline for 2 or 3 days. You could also do natural medicine. And, you know, the natural medicine things that I often recommend to help people prevent Lyme disease are doing, if you are not sensitive to garlic like I am, eat lots of garlic because garlic can kill Lyme disease. You can take astragalus. And then you do preventative things in terms of finding ticks on yourself. So make sure that if you've been outside, it's a good idea to check yourself thoroughly to make sure there are no ticks attached to you. Ron and I have taken to being out in the yard because with my health stuff, I feel so much better in the sunshine. And yesterday it got up, might have hit 70 yesterday. If it wasn't, it felt like 70 when you were in full sun, but it was certainly in the 60s. So we were out and we lay in the yard and it was wonderful. And I did yin yoga in the yard. So one of the things I enjoy doing is yoga in the yard. Why yoga in the yard? I even did a yin yoga class in my backyard. And I think Angie was tickled because she could see the sunshine behind me. She could see the trees and the sky behind me. Because, you know, so what I do is I take my tablet and I had my tablet. And next time I'm going to take my tablet and hook it up to a Bluetooth speaker because then it's louder outside. And I might even have to get a better Bluetooth speaker. Anyway, so that was a great thing to do. So I've been enjoying doing yoga outside, and especially after a bike ride, doing yin yoga outside. It's so relaxing and I get the benefits of the sunshine. But what am I doing? I'm lying on the ground. So now our lawn is trimmed pretty close. So it's not like I'm lying in the weeds, and I am using a mat. So I check the mat and I check myself afterwards, and I'm even spraying the mat with insect repellent. One of the insect repellents I like the best has Bio-UD in it, which is a tomato extract, and that's supposed to work as well as DEET. So that's something you can buy perhaps in stores, definitely online. But look, Bio-UD is not a brand, it's a brand name of the substance, but it's not the brand name of the bug repellent. It will be an ingredient in a bug repellent. So that's something to look for. So I'll spray my mat with that and then I'll just check everything. And, you know, you want to make sure you keep your grass cut short. And if you're working in, a lot of people are working in damp areas right now and old leaves and, you know, dead branches. And that's what Ron was doing. He was clearing branches and working in, you know, dead leaves from last season. And that's probably how he got the tick bite. So be real careful of that. If you're doing that kind of work, you want to make sure you do a full tick check on yourself. Take a good shower right after you're done, because you'll scrub any ticks off of you if you don't find them. But do check yourself. And if you have to check places you can't see, get someone else to do it. So anyway, so there's going to be so much information. It's a 2-day conference with lots and lots of speakers. So it's going to be an incredible amount of information. So so again, if you're interested in attending this conference as a student or as a practitioner, you can visit LymeDiseaseConference.com to register. All right. So I think the next thing we want to talk about is respiratory allergies. It's that time of year, and I see this one sniffling, and I keep asking him, do you have COVID? He's like, no, I don't have COVID.
No, it's my allergies. And then I keep telling her that, and yeah. I get all irritated because she, you know, I always have allergies this time of year.
Right.
Right.
Right. And so, do you have COVID or do you have allergies? Well, one of the ways, well, that's a thing. And
people
worry about whether they could have one or the other. And that's why it's good to keep some COVID tests around. If you are really not feeling right, if you're having a stuffy, runny nose, especially if you start getting a sore throat, if you feel achy and feverish, it's probably a good idea to do a COVID test. But if you have your normal allergy symptoms that you get every year and you don't feel particularly under the weather in any other way, you probably have respiratory allergies, because I'll tell you right now, the tree pollen count is very high, and there's a variety of trees that are spewing pollen right now. So soon we're going to see, now it's the beginning of May, so we're going to start seeing those clouds of green powder blowing out of our local trees. And you know how you, if you park outside, because I have to park my car outside during the day when I'm at work, then you get to your car at the end of the day and you could write your name in your car because there's this greenish, yellowish dust all over your car. And I think that dust, that's mostly pine pollen, isn't it?
A lot of it is.
Yeah. There's pine pollen and there's oak pollen and there's cedar, there's juniper. There's a lot of trees that are blowing out pollen right now. It lands on your car, it lands on your hair and on your clothes. And if you have tree pollen allergies, this can be a really tough time of year. So here's some allergies that you may experience and when you might experience them. So allergies that occur in particular seasons are often known as hay fever, because people would get allergies the time of year when they would cut the hay, because they would have allergies to grass. And so what an allergy is something that triggers an allergic response. And when you're talking about allergies to pollen, you're talking about eosinophils that are turning into immune globulin E and releasing histamine. And so trees, grasses, and weeds that from insect pollinated plants, they're too heavy to remain airborne for long, and they're less likely to trigger an allergic reaction. So it's the allergens that you get are generally from wind pollinated plants. So they have fine pollen that you can see flowing through the air and landing on stuff. The heavier pollen. So an example of heavier pollen, people think that they're allergic to goldenrod because goldenrod comes up at about the same time of year in the late summer, early fall that ragweed does. And people are generally not allergic to goldenrod. And the reason for that is that goldenrod, as this just said, has a heavy pollen that is not, it's not wind pollinated, whereas ragweed has a much lighter pollen that can blow through the air. So seasonal allergy is less common in the winter, but you can have all year round allergic rhinitis. Yippee. So, and different plants emit pollen at different times of the year. So depending where you live, you're going to get different stuff. And I often notice, you know, because I monitor other parts of the country. My sister lives, you know, almost 300 miles south of here in New Jersey, and they have a little slightly different season than we do. They're enough further enough south that that it's a little bit different. It's not a huge amount different. I mean, because she's 200 and change miles from us, but that's not not latitude-wise. Latitude-wise, from latitude to latitude, it's probably less than that. It's probably more like 100 and change, which is, you know, not nothing, but it's not as much as, because, you know, we're going on a diagonal to go visit her. So that doesn't change the latitude as much. Having said that, she is in a different bioregion. I think we're in bioregion 6 and she's in 7. So, and bioregions have slightly different plant populations. Anyway, so of course your seasonal allergies, you might be sneezing, you might have a runny or stuffy nose, you can have watery, itchy eyes, your sinuses can itch, your ears can itch, your throat can itch, you can even get congestion and blockage sensation in your ear, and you can drip down the back of your throat from post-nasal drip. Can get headaches, get coughing, mm-hmm. wheezing, mm-hmm. and even shortness of breath. And if you have asthma, your asthma can get triggered this time of year. And so you get hay fever when your immune system finds that airborne substance that's usually harmless and decides that it's dangerous and responds to substances or allergens in your blood, and you release histamine. And histamine causes that inflammatory response that you get. In the spring, it's usually trees, and birch is a big one. And we do definitely have birch trees around here, right?
Yep, yeah. We do.
So it's a common offender, and many people with hay fever react to birch pollen. And you can also react to cedar, alder, horse chestnut, willow, and poplar. And so one of the things you can do is if you have a weather app on your phone or a weather program that you like to check out on your computer, often your weather apps will tell you what's going on in terms of pollen. Often I'm sitting with my patients and we're talking about the seasonal allergies, and I'll pull out my phone and I'll check out my weather app, and it'll tell me what pollens are active today. And if I were to look today, there's probably somewhere between 5 and 10 trees that are spewing right now. It's a lot. So, summer, I find that, thank you, Kristen. Hi, Kristen. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm. Hay fever gets its name from the hay cutting season. So when you cut the hay, you're going to get some hay pollen. So anytime that they're cutting hay, which can be, you know, as soon as the grass gets tall enough, we have hay cutters on our road in a couple of places, like I think 2 miles down the road towards 195 and in the other direction too, that you see the big marshmallows. So, so when they cut the hay pollen spews and off you go. So that can happen as soon as the grass grows. And if it gets tall enough in May, it's going to happen in May. And then, of course, it just grows. It's a big cycle. The grass grows, they cut it. The grass grows and they cut it and you get your symptoms, and then it grows again. So there's a few cycles of that. And then, you know, if you want to run and play on maybe you shouldn't do that. Go play on the marshmallows. We've done that before. Anyway, I'm saying marshmallows. If you don't know what I'm talking about, marshmallows. So Depending on where you're listening, maybe you don't know what that is. So what they do is they have threshers, is that right? That cut the hay and roll them into big cylindrical, very large cylindrical balls. Well, not balls, big cylindrical object. And those cylinders are probably a good 5 feet high, wouldn't you say? Maybe 5 feet high and maybe 10 feet wide. And they're cylindrical. And then they wrap them in white plastic. So they look like big marshmallows sitting in the field. And then they can go and collect up those marshmallows easily and then give them or sell them to whoever needs hay. Like when we went to farm to table barn up in Woodstock this weekend, and all the cows were eating hay in the gorgeous new barn up at the farm to table shop. So that's another item. All right. So the fall's when you get the ragweed, and it's not just ragweed. There's a lot of weeds that come up, and I see people they have allergies to grasses. It's like late summer, early fall. Ragweed, and ragweed pollen is so allergenic, and ragweed is an invasive species. And you'll see ragweed growing in disturbed soil. So one of the places I watch for the ragweed is I like to go walking. Sometimes I go walking down my road, and along the roadside, I'll see the ragweed and I'll be like, oh, the ragweed's coming up. And I'll pay attention to it to see about when it's going to start blooming. So yeah, ragweed, it's just such a problem. But ragweed comes at a time of year when you also get various grasses, timothy grass and other kinds of grasses, and people get allergic to lamb's ears, and sometimes chickweed, things that have pollen that sprays, that are not necessarily with lighter pollen that goes in the air. So mugwort is a big one too, sorrel, even nettles. Some people can, when the nettles go to flower, some people have allergies to nettles, which is unfortunate because nettles is when you collect the nettle leaves now, especially if you get Urtica dioica nettles, if you can collect them and then dry them or steam them or put them in soup, it's a wonderful plant. Once you put them in warm water, all the sting goes out of them, and then you can eat them like they're a green, and you can make them into tea. Plantain as well. Some people are allergic to plantain, that lovely little plant, because that's a healing, wonderful plant. But there's Plantago lanceolata and Plantago psyllium, and there's Plantago ovata. And one of them makes those funny flowers with a very narrow stem that has a little brown cone with little white stars around it. That's one of the plantains. And then there's ovata. I believe that's ovata. One of them comes up with these spires with lots of green seeds on them. And when I was a kid, we used to take the spires with the green seeds and rip them off, and that was fun. But anyway, those can cause allergies too. And then in the winter, your outdoor allergens are dormant. And so if you just have hay fever, you're probably going to feel a lot better. But if you have issues with dust mites, pet dander, and cockroaches, and mold, then you're going to have some issues when you're indoors. So indoor allergens are often easier to take care of than outdoor pollens, because you have just no control over what's growing out there, but you do have some control over what's going on inside your house. So here's all the things that I try to get people to do. Wash your bedding in very hot water at least once a week, and I know it's hard for people to do your bedding every single week. And when I say bedding, do I mean your sheets? So I tell people, pull your pillowcase. If you're really, really allergic, pull your pillowcases twice a week. This doesn't mean you have to wash them. It means you have to have a lot of pillowcases. And you can launder them every 2 weeks if you want to, but you want to change the pillowcases twice a week if you have the time to do that. And if you're really lazy and it's hard for you, whatever pillow you put your head on at night, at least change that one. That's one way to go. And just, invest in some more pillowcases so you're not, having to do laundry every 2 days. So that you throw it in the hamper and then you just wash them all when you get around to it. And then, of course, if you can do your sheets weekly, that's great. And we just read something on, I don't know if we were reading it on social media, about how guys admitted that they only do their sheets, that they'll change their sheets every, wait for it, 4 months.
Yeah, that's gross.
That some guys would do that. I was always, when I, I don't know, when I had a more regular schedule, I used to do my sheets weekly. And I think before I met you, I used to do my sheets weekly. Mm. That was just one of the things I did. And it's kind of a pain. And you said, it's okay, we can do them every 2 weeks. So we started doing them every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And still, I question that because it's probably better to do them every week. So I'm telling you, you probably want to do your sheets and pillowcases every week. Pillowcases, if you can get to it, you might want to do it twice a week. And then, and if not all of your pillowcases, just the one that you put your head on. And you can cover your bedding and pillows with allergen-proof covers. The more you wash your bedding, the better you're going to feel, because dust mites, your bed is ground zero for dust mites. You shed your skin cells, and then the dust mites eat the skin cells, and then they release their stool, and their poop has DNA and protein and bacteria in it. And that's what's so allergenic. It's not the mites themselves. It's more what they leave behind. And so you breathe that in, and that's what gives you your allergy symptoms. And ground double zero for dust mites is your pillow and your pillowcase, which is why the pillow where you lay your head, that's where the one you want to change the most, because that's where your nose is. And that's where you're breathing it in, and you're shedding the skin cells from your face, and off you go. So stuffed toys, that's another place that dust can reside, and it suggests that you take them away from your kids. That's going to go over well. I'm wondering if it's just a good idea to wash them or just wipe them down with a damp cloth and let them sit in the sun. Of course, you want to fix water leaks and clean up water damage that causes mold to flourish, and clean moldy surfaces regularly. Clean your humidifiers, your swamp coolers, air conditioners. Even your refrigerator can harbor mold, and especially if you don't always change out your food. Like if you don't get around to your food, you can get science projects in your refrigerator, so be careful of that. Mm. And if it gets very humid in your house, you may want to do a dehumidifier. To diagnose them, it's usually easy to diagnose because if your nose is drippy and it doesn't stop and it's the time of year when the pollen is out, you probably have allergies. You could do allergy testing if you want to, but I don't always do respiratory allergy testing. I mean, I'll do it sometimes, but respiratory, like, you know, for IgE outdoor allergens, I don't always do it. I'll do it sometimes depending on the person, but if you get the symptoms when the pollen comes out, then you probably know what it is. And then you treat it the way that you know how to treat it, and you're probably going to get better. The person often comes in diagnosed anyway. So the best thing to do is to avoid the allergens and beat them back and lower your symptom raise your symptom threshold, rather. In the bad times of year, you can use an air conditioner or a HEPA filter. In the summer, the HEPA filter is going to draw pollen and allergens out of the air. And you can do that. You have to be careful with ceiling fans because ceiling fans will move the stuff around, but a HEPA filter will help to draw stuff out of the air. When your hay fever is active, you do want to keep your windows shut, limit your time outdoors, which is unfortunate, and even wear a dust mask when you're outside, especially on windy days, which is depressing.
Masks. We love our masks.
So, and you want to avoid cigarette smoke, which can make the symptoms worse. And cigarette smoke, you're breathing in all kinds of particulates that have oxidative damage and will do damage to the inside of your respiratory passages. So that's going to make your symptoms work. You can do over-the-counter decongestants and antihistamines. And there's some of them are more or less likely to make you sleepy. Something like cetirizine and levocetirizine are going to be less likely to make you sleepy. Diphenhydramine is going to put you to bed. So you have to be careful of that. Phenylephrine is going to wire you out. So some of them are decongestants. And so the antihistamines are going to lower the histamine level in your body. So you're going to have less of a reaction. Something like phenylephrine, that's a sympathomimetic that's going to tend to dry you out. Pseudoephedrine and phenylephrine, they dry you out, and that's how they work. And so if you're really severe, you can get allergy shots, which are they're desensitizing allergy shots, and they're a type of immunotherapy, and you can get those if you need to. some medications, as we said, they can cause drowsiness, dizziness, and confusion. And so in terms of natural medicine, there's so many things that you can do. So I'll talk about some of those things. And so I wanted to remind you that diphenhydramine, which is commonly branded as Benadryl, is often used as a sleep medication. Cetirizine, levocetirizine, loratadine, and desloratadine are less likely to make you drowsy. And fexofenadine is the least likely of the common meds to make you drowsy. It's also the least likely to give you cognitive impairment. Antihistamines can have anti-muscarinic side effects, and the muscarinic cholinergic neurotransmitter system in the brain is involved in memory and cognition. So you have to be careful of that. Nasal sprays, let's talk about those. So I am a fan of the nasal spray my preference is that people use nasal sprays that are natural. So if you want to use a plain old saline nasal spray, that's great because it's going to wash your nose. It's going to help to wash pollen and pollutants and bacteria and viruses out of your nose and mold. And then there's nasal sprays that contain things besides salt that contain stuff like grapefruit seed extract or silver. Or xylitol. And those are great because xylitol is really nice because xylitol helps it so that microorganisms don't stick to the inside of your nose. Microorganisms and pollen and pollutants, they are less likely to stick to the inside of your nose. So it helps to wash things out. And it also kills biofilm. So if you have any extra bacteria living in your nose, making biofilms, a protein to protect the bacteria so that it has some protection from your immune system, xylitol can break up that biofilm. And that xylitol is what's in your toothpaste to help break up the biofilm on your teeth, otherwise known as plaque. So nasal sprays with xylitol, I'm a fan of those. Grapefruit seed extract will kill pretty much anything, molds, bacteria, and viruses. And then salt will help to draw the congestion out of your nose. And it's not a decongestant per se, it's just osmotic. Other than causing a little bit of irritation, these nasal sprays don't generally have side effects, and they're not immunosuppressive. If you use a nasal spray that's a steroid, like mometasone, fluticasone, and budesonide, some of the brand name, you can get those over the counter now, and you can also get them prescribed to you. Those nasal sprays with steroids in them, they work. They make you feel better because they suppress the immune system, but they are suppressive. And because they're suppressive, you're more likely to get infections, especially mold and fungal infections in your nose and even in the back of your throat if it's dripping down the back of your throat. You know that if you have asthma and you take a steroid inhaler, you're supposed to gargle after you use it because if it sits in the back of your throat, you're more likely to get thrush. So the other problem with those steroid nasal sprays is that they're catabolic steroids, which means that their job is to break down tissue and turn it into sugar so you have energy to run away from the bear. So if you're going to stick them in your nose, they could break down the tissue inside your nose. So you'll see if you use a lot of steroid nasal sprays, your nose is going to become paler. It's going to have less healthy mucosa. It's going to have less blood supply, and you could get irritations and you could actually get lesions in your nose and get nosebleeds from that. So if you use those too much, that's the problem. If you use, I've been using xylitol nasal spray myself for years with some essential oils in it. I have no problem with it. And, I don't have lesions. I don't have nosebleeds. I don't have anything like that. And my nose is very comfortable. So HEPA filters and other air purifiers, I like to recommend those. So wherever you spend a lot of your time, it's nice to have those around. Using home air purifiers, there's a lot of concerns around air quality, and people are spending more time. People have been spending more time indoors, especially since the pandemic. Air purifiers work by sanitizing the air, and they try to get allergens, pollutants, and toxins. Which are different from essential oil diffusers and humidifiers, which actually add particles to indoor air. So it pulls things out of the air. And so the particles that are removed depends on what you get. Certain versions are made with filters to trap particles as air runs through them. So whereas others neutralize particles without filtering them first. You can get a negative ion emitting air purifier that attracts positive ion particles in the air so they're neutralized. The only problem with ionizers is they can emit ozone. which can be toxic and causes oxidative stress. So air purifiers can be really effective. It won't necessarily neutralize everything that's in your home because particles can sit on soft surfaces and not move. So you do have to do some cleaning too. It's only going to remove things that are actually in the air, but it can help you with other strategies. And so it can help to remove the most common airborne allergies. And if you use a high efficient, so HEPA stands for high efficiency particulate air filter. And that's the best known to trap airborne allergies. Mold particles can become dangerous for people with asthma and lung conditions, and air purifiers can work to some degree, but you really want to filter the air. And so make sure you have good air filters on your air system in your house. And filtered air purifiers may remove some smoke in the air, including smoke. So it's terrible, but you know, if you live out west or you live somewhere where there's a fire, air quality can be affected by fires, by wildfires. Obviously, air quality is affected by tobacco smoke, and those, they can't 100% get rid of those. And if you're smoking is just so bad for you. Smoking is really bad for you because of the oxidative damage that it does to your respiratory passages, and you're putting particulates into the air, and even people who don't smoke are going to be affected by the toxins from secondhand smoke. And there also can be indoor toxins from cleaning products and personal care products, any kind of particulates that go into the air. So if you're spraying on deodorant, or you're using bleach to clean your toilet, or you're using other kinds of cleaning sprays, they can be harmful too. So what I do is when I'm cleaning, regardless of whether I'm using something natural or I'm using a bit of bleach, I always have, if I'm cleaning in my bathroom, I definitely have the exhaust fan going. And then the weather's nice enough, I open the windows. And so I'm going to take out some of the, I'm going to dilute some of that pollution, because the solution to pollution is dilution. I'm not sure who first said that, but Walter Crinian, who, may he rest in peace, he was one of our naturopathic detox experts, and he used to say that a lot. So air purifiers, air purifiers can really help you because you're kind of treating the cause. You're making it so that, whereas if you take medication, you're getting rid of the symptoms that you have as a result of breathing the toxins. But if you have an air purifier, you're getting the toxins out of the air. They really work better if they have a filter. And you also want to get a filter that is the right size for your house. So you have to, when you get your filter, you want to make sure, you want to decide what area you want it to cover and see what area that filter is rated for and get an appropriate one. So there's other things you can do. You can clean your rugs and carpet and furniture fabric and sweep those spaces with a HEPA filter vacuum, and you can vacuum off your couches too. You might want to replace carpet with vinyl or hardwood flooring. Wash your bedding in hot water, as we talked about, as often as you can. Bathe your pets. Have your pets, make sure your pets are eating a healthy diet, that the pets don't have allergies, because the pets are not healthy, they're going to give off more dander and they're going to make you more allergic. And hopefully your pets can go outside, because they're going to get more exercise that way. They're going to be healthier and they're going to get rid of some of that dander outdoors. Make sure your home is in the right humidity. Don't smoke inside the house. Use non-toxic cleaning products and change your HVAC air filters every 30 to 90 days. Do you do that?
Not 30 to 90, but yeah.
That's what you're supposed to.
Well, okay. Depends. Yes. So, yep.
So filtering the air can be a really great help for your allergy symptoms. So here's natural treatment for respiratory allergies. Number one, what's the number one treatment for everything? Do you know what the number one treatment for everything is?
Rest.
You got it.
Yay.
Stress reduction.
I got it.
If you're stressed, your adrenal hormones are going to be focused on moving you through fight or flight and not as available to power your immune system. The calmer you are, the less symptoms you may have. Get more rest and more sleep. Doing yoga, tai chi, qigong, meditation, intimacy, time with kids, being in nature, being with friends, laughter, music, crafts, reading, just doing less stuff, laying around in your yard. I made sure that we have our lounge chairs out in the yard, so anytime we feel like it, we can go sit outside. And, you know, just, in terms of what health stuff I'm going through right now, I've had to really focus on doing less stuff. So sitting in the sun makes me feel better, and just sitting around is really nice. So we have these nice gravity chairs, and we can sit in the yard. We can have something to drink, and read a book or catch up on a podcast, and just sit outside and just be in the sunshine. And of course, you know, if you're out in the sunshine, then you want to, if you're out long enough, then you have to think about sunscreen. And Ron was taking doxycycline, so he found out the hard way that he really needed to be using sunscreen because he's not accustomed to doing that.
I got cooked.
Yeah. So you need to clean up your diet. If you're eating too much sugar and processed food, your body will become depleted of the nutrients it needs to power your immune system. You'll also have more unfriendly bacteria and yeast, increasing inflammation and crowding out healthy probiotic bacteria that can help make healthy immune compounds for you. So you know that if you have a good complement of healthy bacteria in your digestive system, that helps to reduce allergy symptoms. So you can take a probiotic, you can simply eat healthy food. If you're eating a good plant-based diet, you're going to get a nice variety of species of healthy bacteria in your digestive system. Mm. And you can take oral probiotics. You can also eat fermented foods. You can eat things like sauerkraut or other fermented vegetables, fermented beets, fermented carrots, fermented ginger. You can eat yogurt. You can eat yogurt that's plant-based or yogurt that's dairy-based if you're not dairy intolerant. You can eat and drink kefir. Kefir has an amazing amount of species of bacteria. And if you're not dairy intolerant, kefir can be a really nice way to go. I'm going to have some water. Okay, avoiding food intolerances. If you're eating foods that don't work for you, once again, you can also directly cause more inflammation, which will lower your symptom threshold. Dairy specifically increases mucus, even in people who have no demonstrable allergy to it. If you have a lot of mucus, you may want to avoid dairy and see if that helps. And that's unfortunate because We Like It ice cream opens in the beginning of April. And so they're already open. So we were out that way. So we headed over to We Like It, mind you.
And we like it.
Various dairy places are getting the non-dairy memo. I mean, it's a very strange thing for We Like It, they have cows across the street. They sell non-dairy frozen treats now, so you can get sorbet there and you can get oat milk based ice cream. So that's interesting, and most ice cream places are going to start doing that because, you know, they want their dairy free because, you know, there are families who want to go and there are people who have dairy allergies who still want to enjoy, and dairy free ice cream has gotten really good. So there's so many dairy-free ice creams on the market. So you can still have a bit of ice cream and not necessarily have to do the dairy. And I find that if I eat dairy-free ice cream, I definitely will get mucusy if I eat ice cream with dairy in it, and not so much if I eat non-dairy ice cream. You have to be careful of the amount of sugar, though. But if you're eating any foods that cause you digestive upset, it's a good idea to not eat those. Then eat foods that reduce allergy symptoms as long as you're not allergic to them. If you're allergic to a food, don't eat it, even if it's supposed to be good for you. If you're allergic to broccoli, don't eat broccoli, even though broccoli is good for you in general. Garlic is wonderful for you. Garlic is a great food. It's antimicrobial. It's anti-cancer. It thins your blood. It's great for cardiovascular health. It can fight Lyme disease. I can't go near it because it makes me sick. So I'm not going to. All right. So foods that reduce allergy symptoms, ones that are high in vitamin C and bioflavonoids like citrus, such as oranges, lemon, limes, and grapefruit. Kiwi, per unit volume, did you know a kiwi fruit generally has more vitamin C in it than an orange? Oranges are a good source of vitamin C, but kiwi fruit are better. I mean, think about when you eat a kiwi fruit, how sour it is. They're a really good source of vitamin C. So are strawberries. And we're a little behind the strawberry season right now. Strawberries, if you're getting strawberries at the store, they're probably coming from California. They might be coming from Florida. They might be coming from Mexico. So they're ready there, but they're not going to be ready here for probably another month or so. But if you can get good quality organic strawberries, you can get them. And you have to be careful with strawberries because strawberries are heavily sprayed with pesticides when they're not organic. Black currant happens to be really high in vitamin C. And you're not necessarily going to find fresh black currant, but you can get black currant juice. peppers of all kinds, whether it's a cayenne pepper or a bell pepper or a hot pepper, they all have a lot of vitamin C in them. So that's another way to get your vitamin C. Brussels sprouts are a decent source of vitamin C. So here's some good foods for seasonal allergies. So I may have mentioned them. Ginger is a really good one, and I drink some ginger tea almost every day, and ginger is a wonderful anti-inflammatory, and it's drying, it reduces inflammation, and it can be really soothing. You can use bee pollen. Bee pollen has enzymes, it has nectar and flower pollen and some wax, and some people use it and it really helps their hay fever. You could try taking some bee pollen. That if you use local bee pollen, it might be better off, because it might be more likely to have the species of pollen that you're allergic to. So you can get it at your farmer's market. It comes in pellets, and it can be a little bittersweet or nutty. Then we already talked about citrus fruits. Turmeric is a great anti-inflammatory, and the curcumin in it is wonderfully anti-inflammatory. And there have been some mouse studies on turmeric showing that it reduces their allergic response. You can take it in pills. It's in tinctures. It's in teas. You can get these nice turmeric teas. You can make golden milk tea, which is really wonderful. That'll often have golden milk, and it'll have turmeric and ginger and a few other herbs in it. And you can put it in coconut milk and heat it up and put a little bit of honey in it, and you have a great hot drink. You can make it up that way, heat it up and then put it in the fridge for days. When it's hot out, you can still drink it cold. And so you want to make sure there's some black pepper in it to help if you're using just turmeric powder, you want to make sure there's some black pepper in it so it helps you to absorb the turmeric a little bit more readily. Black pepper increases the bioavailability of curcumin by up to 2,000%.
Works.
So if you're going to eat turmeric powder or take inexpensive turmeric, just make sure there's some black pepper in it. All right, tomatoes. So if you're not allergic to tomatoes, they are high in vitamin C. They also have lycopene. They're wonderfully antioxidant. Lycopene is good for stopping systemic inflammation, and lycopene is going to be more bioavailable from cooked tomatoes. So it's going to be in your salsa, in your tomato sauce, and even in your ketchup and in your tomato juice. Salmon and other oily fish and fish oil. So the omega-3 fatty acids, especially that EPA, you're going to have less allergy symptoms. And you can take fish oil that has a high quantity of EPA or eicosapentaenoic acid, and you can eat fatty fish. Try to get about 8 ounces a week. So that would probably, for most people, that's going to be 2 servings of fatty fish a week. Then there's onions. And which I can't do, but onions are really high in quercetin. And quercetin is a great bioflavonoid that has antihistamine benefits. It's a mast cell stabilizer. And raw red onions have the most quercetin. White onions don't have quite as much, and nor do scallions. So raw red onions, things that are colored, tend to have more bioflavonoids in it. So this is an example of that. You can have them in your guacamole, you can have them in your salad, in your sandwiches, and if you can eat them and not get digestive upset, God bless you. All right, so we talked about cleaning up your environment, changing your pillowcases a couple times a week, washing your sheets weekly, and bedding every 2 to 4 weeks. And I'm only giving you those numbers because, obviously, if you wash them every week, you'd be better off. And especially in the high season, if you have the time to do it, you may want to do your bedding weekly. But most people don't. So that's why I'm like, all right, at least your pillowcases definitely weekly, if not twice a week, and your sheets weekly if you can, and your bedding every couple of weeks to a month, just because that's reasonable to do. All right. And then we talked about the HEPA filter, make sure you get your ductwork clean, make sure ductwork is clean. open your windows to outdoor air when there's little pollen and close them when there is. And take a shower after coming in from outdoors when the pollen count is high, because you're going to get pollen all over you and you're going to keep breathing it in, and it sticks in your hair and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Clean your nose. Use a neti pot upon waking and at bedtime, and also when you come in from outdoors. If you have city water, it's been cleaned with chlorine, so there's generally no concern about instilling microorganisms. If you have a deep well that's 100 feet plus, the water sits at 55 degrees Fahrenheit in the ground, so microorganisms won't grow there. If you have a shallow well, or you're just concerned about the water source that goes in your nose, consider using distilled water and gently warming it to around 100 degrees Fahrenheit, not too hot because you can burn yourself. And don't use cold water, it will make you dizzy. You can also use a nasal spray containing saline, xylitol, and or grapefruit seed extract, which will help to clear mucus, kill resident microorganisms, and mechanically remove pollen, dust, and mold and pollutants. And also gargle, as cleaning your nose can send some contaminants to the back of your throat, so you want to get those out too. Cleaning your nose can be so helpful. I have so many patients who they use the xylitol nasal spray and it makes them feel so much better. So there are supplements that you can take to help you with your allergies, and we'll run through a list of them here. And thanks to Ronald Hoffman for putting this list together. We already talked about quercetin, which is a great anti-inflammatory. Bromelain is pineapple enzyme, and it breaks down, it's antimicrobial, and it also breaks down inflammatory compounds. Stinging nettles are urtica dioica. It's great. It stabilizes mast cells. It gives you less hives and less allergy symptoms. N-acetylcysteine is a great mucolytic, and it breaks up mucus, and it's detoxifying. And then omega-3 fish oil, we already talked about. Vitamin C actually works as an antihistamine, so you can take that too, and you can do it with bioflavonoids as well. Vitamin D, if your vitamin D is low, you want to get your vitamin D checked and dial in a dose so that your vitamin D is sitting around 50 to 55 nanograms per milliliter, so get your doctor in on that. Butterbur is a great herb. It has these great big round serrated leaves, and butterbur, we use it for migraines, but it also can help with allergy symptoms. Probiotics, we already talked about. If you have good healthy bacteria in your digestive system, you're going to have less symptoms. Pycnogenol, which is pine bark extract, it's a terrific antioxidant. It can tend to be pricey, but it can still be helpful and might be something you could try. MSM, which is methyl sulfonyl methane, may block allergic reactions at the tissue level. It's a good source of sulfur. Supporting your adrenals. So depending on what's going on, you have to talk to your doctor about, do I need my adrenals supported? And depending on whether you have high blood pressure or not, you may or may not use licorice. You might use pantothenic acid. There are adrenal cortical extracts you can get. And then there's great herbs like ashwagandha, eleuthero, ginseng, rhodiola, tulsi, that all can be helpful. Transfer factor is, I don't use it a lot because it tends to be expensive, but it can help to balance immune responses. Sulforaphane, that's what's in broccoli and broccoli sprouts, so eating your cruciferous vegetables is going to help. Apigenin, which is in parsley and celery and certain spices, and it switches your allergy symptoms towards T helper cells, so it's going to calm your allergy reactions down. Luteolin, which is a really strong histamine blocker, is from perilla. So you can also take perilla plant and may have neuroprotective activities. And as we talked about, the xylitol, grapefruit seed extract, and salt nasal sprays. And then you can also get eye drops that have homeopathic remedies. And there's a few brands that you can get that have homeopathic properties that can be nice and helpful. And often one of the things they'll have in them is eye bright. You can also get quail egg extract, which is a tryptase inhibitor and can be taken for acute symptoms as a chewable. Bioflavonoids, they're in the pithy part of the rind of citrus fruits and are wonderful anti-inflammatories. They strengthen the lining of your respiratory tract. Eyebright also has a great affinity for the eyes. And if you get itching and burning, you can drink the tea. It can be included in supplements, and you can also make compresses with the tea and place them right over your eyes. You can also do this with black tea, which is astringent and reduces inflammation. Quercetin can also be found in more absorbable forms, such as alpha-isoquercetin and quercetin phytosome. So So there's so many things you can do for respiratory allergies, and you know, and respiratory allergies, people are getting them worse because pollution is one of the reasons why they happen, unfortunately. So one of the solutions to reducing respiratory allergens is to reduce carbon output. So getting hybrid cars and getting electric cars and reducing emissions, driving your car less, riding your bike more, going for walks more, all of these things are going to be helpful. And I don't think I wrote here getting regular exercise can also be helpful. Getting regular exercise, not too much, but a regular amount of exercise is going to reduce inflammation in your body in general. And you know, anything that reduces stress, of course, and when you practice deep breathing, that calms your respiratory system down. It calms your autonomic nervous system down, so it tends to make you feel better and tends to make you less inflamed and not respond as dramatically to pollen and pollutants in the air. So take homes for this week. It's allergy season and we have some help for that. You can use neti pots, nasal sprays, you can gargle, eat healthy, reduce your stress, clean up your environment, and there are supplements and herbs and healthy foods that you can use. I encourage you to write in with your questions to radionaturopath@gmail.com on my Facebook page at FranStorchND or write in live while we're doing Facebook Live. All right, so you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. Mm. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week. Next week will be an encore presentation because I will be in Florida next week. So we're going to be back with a new Radio Naturopath in 2 weeks. But you'll still be able to listen next week and in 2 weeks on 91.7 FM, WHUS stores and WHUS.org. And remember, if you're interested in attending the Lyme Bites Conference, you can get more information about that at LymeDiseaseConference.com. All right. So thank you for listening.